Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
That's right, your Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week, the slightly sideways Drea Kaufman.
Oh my gosh, I've had so many technical issues this week, you guys. I can't even. That's all I have to say about that. And I'll have to post a picture of what's happening right now, because we've been trying, and somehow my keyboard and mouse broke. I don't know. I'm actually quite technically savvy, and this is just breaking my brain. But my computer monitor and everything is like sideways right now, but everything's working like normal. So it's kind of a good summary of my day and my week and what it's like having a toddler. So if you ever wondered, it's like looking at a computer monitor sideways and having no idea why everything still works.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. But hey, we're glad to be with you. And yeah, as you can tell, it's been an interesting week, which is why this episode is coming to you late. But we're really excited to be here. And before we get into everything, wanted to read out a couple of reviews that we had gotten on iTunes recently. They just came in, and we're really excited about them and just people giving us reviews, because that's awesome. But this one was 5 stars. Great podcast, it says. From Supergirl 10, said, "This is the best Harry Potter podcast out there. I one time wrote them a letter when I was 10, and it filled my heart with glee listening to them read my letter on the show. I have been a fan for a long time, and I would recommend this to anyone looking for a detailed overview of the books. 10 out of 10 would highly recommend." That's pretty
that
awesome.
That warms my heart and makes me feel old.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome because I'm pretty sure that I still have that letter right here on my desk, actually. So
I remember that letter.
Yeah, so that was really cool. We have another one from, I think it's a Sib Vulture. Binged it, 5 stars, just started listening 2 months ago, and I'd listen to about 5 or 6 episodes a day till I had to take a break and think over everything. I love this podcast, and there have been a few views that I think differently, which is nice to hear other thoughts. Again, love the show and can't wait for more. Zach." Well, thank you so much, Zach. We appreciate that. And, you know, that's kind of the cool thing about, you know, any podcast is, you know, you don't have to necessarily agree with the hosts. But I find, as I listen to podcasts, you know, sometimes something somebody says makes me think of something in a way that I hadn't thought of before, which is this one of the fun things about doing podcasts in the first place. So yeah, thank you both for reaching out to us and giving us a review on Apple Podcasts, because it really does help people find the show, and it means a lot to us to hear what you think.
Yeah, and we were even just talking kind of a little bit about that last week, how, you know, we have to be able to engage in conversation and learn opinions other than what we know and think is correct, so that we can continue to grow and
yes,
challenge ourselves. So I think it's really great that you're able to do that, and I'm glad we're able to be a part of that for you. So that's really awesome.
Absolutely. We would love it if you would give us a star rating review over there on Apple Podcasts, and you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. So it doesn't matter if you're an Apple user or not, we're everywhere podcasts can be had. Just look for Owl Posts. You can find us online on Twitter at Join Nerd Party, or on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. So follow us and like us on those places. You can go to thenerdparty.com, where you can see all of the shows that we're doing. And not only that, can you see those shows, but you can also send us an email. Go to thenerdparty.com/contact, and if you choose Outpost, that'll send an email to Drea and I. So very exciting, because we've got some birthday surprises here, Drea, with Chapter 18. And the beginning of this chapter, I was really interested in, because I feel like this chapter kind of gives us an insight to the characters and kind of where they are. And specifically, you know, with Harry confiding in Ron and Hermione about this task, and this fact of, you know, Ron thinks it's going to be easy for him to get the information out of Slughorn, Hermione not so much, but then Harry is really disappointed because he thought Hermione would know exactly what Horcruxes are, and she has no clue, which that is one of the first times that this has happened since the original book when they didn't know who Nicholas Flamel was.
We talked about this briefly in the last chapter, that part of why we thought maybe he didn't implore Dumbledore more for what a Horcrux was because he just assumed Hermione would know. Because at this point in the series, we just assume Hermione knows everything. So I do love that it gives someone like Hermione the opportunity to have to go out and learn, and it challenges her in a different way than it's challenging Harry. And that was one of the things I always really loved about this story arc, is that it really challenges each character in a unique way that's specially catered to them without being like unnecessarily complicated.
Yeah. And I think it is interesting too, because you know, this whole thing is really showcasing the different personalities of them. You know, Ron thinking that Harry's going to have no issue with getting information out of Slughorn because, you know, Slughorn loves him. But Hermione, I think, understanding that, you know, what we've been told here is this memory is something that, you know, Slughorn has obviously tried to change, and therefore he's not really proud of these things, and that it's not going to just be easy to pry this information out of him. So I just thought that was pretty fascinating to see the way in which these kids think. Like, really here, what it is this is the thought process that's going on in their brains. So I really liked kind of seeing how each of them kind of processes this information and what they come up with. So it was fascinating to me.
Yeah, I agree. And it also, I think, highlights what we've talked about in many of our other episodes and in with many other books, how really it's that power of three and that trinity and all of those individual strengths that make them unique that have to come together that make them so strong together versus as individuals, right? They all have their strengths, but they really shine when you put them all together. So I think this is also a good way that it's sort of fractured right now. And so it seems harder than it needs to be because of that, right? Harry is overly frustrated. Ron and Hermione still won't talk to each other. Hermione's in the she's in the bitter mocking stage for Ron, which continues for this whole chapter. This is kind of the longest period that they've all been mad at each other. I think it's even longer than in the fourth book when Ron is mad at Harry because he thinks he puts his name in the Goblet of Fire. So I think it's also interesting to see how these kids are evolving into teenagers and adults and how it's making it harder and harder for them to forgive and move on, as a combination of, I think, them getting older and a combination of hormones, because that can be rough.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing here that I was seeing is that this is clearly teenage behavior on especially Ron and Hermione's part.
Oh, yeah.
Because as we move into the next section, they're in their potions class, and they are given a task of figuring out what a potion is and then having to create the antidote. And this antidote rule is very complicated. I read it a few times, and I still don't understand what this antidote rule is. And so somebody smarter than me explain it to me on Twitter. That'd be great. Hashtag Owlpost. And so
hashtag
explain it to
antidote.
Matt. because it's just super complicated. And Hermione here kind of like is, you know, ribbing Harry with, oh, you're not going to get any shortcuts this time. You're going to have to actually do the work. You're going to have to actually understand it. And so there's just this undercurrent of nastiness that's going on, especially with Hermione these days, even with Harry, that, again, it's just that teenageness. It's that pettiness, right, that you get when you are that young. And so I thought that was really interesting to see this happen. Also, we learn here that Hermione not only is, you know, good at potions still, but she has gotten so good at nonverbal spells at this point that she's having no problem, you know, doing this work. And so I thought those two things together were just really interesting, because Her cattiness has seemed to transfer over not just to Ron, but it's also carrying over to Harry here. And it's not necessarily for a good reason.
It's her cattiness is kind of turning into haughtiness. And it's turning into a little bit of ego and a little bit of pride, right? And I think she's hurt across the board and doesn't know what to do with it. And that's not a justification because she definitely is not treating Harry like a friend should. But she's alone and those were kind of her only friends. And now she's feeling alienated and it's hard, I'm sure, for her to be around Harry without seeing or, you know, experiencing and what's going on with Ron. But all of this time, all I can think is if they sat down and talked about it, right, I feel like it would get better. If everyone was honest, if everyone could talk about it, everyone could be mature about the situation. But then I'm an adult, so maybe I'm asking too much of these kids. But yeah, it was. I found the potions class really interesting because it was kind of the first time, and I like how she did that. That the book that Harry has can't really provide him any additional help or what Hermione calls cheating, and so they are kind of forced to rely on their own skill. And we find that Harry doesn't really have any potion skill outside of this book, but. He does have a skill that we learn near the end of this section, in that we're reminded he's very clever.
This was that classic Harry Potter cheek. Like the fact that he, because he thinks about this and he knows that he could not pull this off in Snape's class, but he will be able to pull this off in Slughorn's class. And what it is, it's there's a note at the bottom about antidotes that says that a bezoar, which is the stone taken from the stomach of a goat, will protect from most poisons. And therefore, you don't even have to worry about an antidote if you just are carrying a bezoar. And so there is just this ultimate amount of cheek of Harry knowing what he can get away with in class. And it's not even the wrong answer, really. You know, even Slughorn says, this is actually a correct answer for all of the potions in this room. He says, you know, there is the fact that bezoars are not necessarily something that are readily accessible all the time. They're kind of rare. And so, but it's interesting because, you know, of course, Slughorn reacts the exact same way that Harry thinks he's going to react. And really, the only people that are pissed at him here are, well, everyone, especially Malfoy and now Ron, who's mad because Harry didn't give the answer to him. Ugh. And again, it's just like super teenage-ness.
Well, and I like Harry's comeback, which comes a little later. But he's like, it wouldn't have had the same impact if I'd given it to you, right? Like, I wasn't doing it because I wanted to score points in potions. I was doing it for my alternative goal that I was given, right? Like, for my objective that I'm supposed to be securing from Dumbledore. So, like, you can't really be mad at me for that. You know, Harry uses this opportunity as the classroom empties out to where he's curried this favor with Slughorn to go up and approach him, much like in the movie he does. And I like the parallel she writes here about him sort of reminding himself of Voldemort in this moment. And he asks him the same question the same way. But the whole way this plays out is totally different than the movie. And you know, he asks about Horcruxes and doesn't lie and says, yes, Dumbledore put me up to this. Yes, I've seen the memory. Yes, I know there's something off. I like that, again, Harry being honest is key to this conversation. And, you know, Slughorn scurries off and, you know, shoos him away and tells him that he doesn't know anything and leave him alone.
Yeah, I mean, I like this section here. Because what's fascinating about it is that it puts everybody on the same playing field in the sense that, you know, Harry knows what he wants from Slughorn. Slughorn knows what Harry wants from him. He also knows what Dumbledore wants from him. And he's refusing to give it to him. And you mentioned something earlier about, you know, kind of Hermione's pride being hurt. And here I think we're also seeing another character who's really prideful in that Slughorn. And he's a character that we've seen have plenty of pride. throughout this book. We see he kind of prides himself on his ability to, you know, wile his way into the hearts of famous people and people who are, he assumes, you know, he sees the potential for being famous. And so therefore, you know, he gets them while they're young. And like, you know, Harry talks about this idea of him being like a spider with a web, you know. And so it's fascinating to kind of see that play out here where, you know, the reason he's not going to answer the question, and Hermione knew why he wasn't, is there is a pride issue here where he can't just give up the answer because it will admit that he was wrong and had done something wrong all those years ago and had an impact then on the world's greatest dark wizard doing something really awful.
Yeah, there's an element of pride here about he wants to be seen in a very, he controls the way he's seen. He controls who he's associated with. He controls what people know and think and feel about him very tightly. And that's, I think, where his pride is bound and is in what others think of him. And he knows that this is sort of the ultimate sacrifice of that, to admit he had any part in educating that and to admit that this need for pride and glory got in the way of making the right decision at the time. And it that I'm sure there's an element compounding this that he also knows he had to, and at this point we don't really know if it was intentional or sort of he's convinced himself that this is actually what happened. You know, but he's altered that memory and he knows it's altered. So, you know, there's just so many things. It's literally asking someone to admit their greatest flaw with no safe space, right? And this great flaw is, it has a significant impact on the world as it is. So it's, you know, it again sort of is just a very big goal he had that wasn't gonna happen, Harry, but good try.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because you know, Harry is worried about how this is gonna affect him in Slughorn, obviously, and you know, Harry is able to kind of smooth things over throughout the next few weeks, but there really aren't any times where he's had an opportunity to spend any more time with him. He's not having any more, you know, Slug Club meetings, and which has been frustrating. And Hermione hasn't been having any luck in the library, even in the restricted section, of finding anything on Horcruxes, except for a book that says that the evil of Horcruxes are too evil to speak of, therefore they will not speak of them, which really makes her mad.
That would make me so angry too, to be fair. I would be so angry if you told me that, okay, so this is a Horcrux. I'm not going to tell you anything about it because it's too terrible, but this is, you know, here's the word. And I love her reaction. Like, why even bother mentioning it then?
Yeah.
Because that's exactly the reaction I would have to a book like that, because that would be so infuriating.
Well, and it's interesting too, because this is the chapter where the students are going to start their apparition and disapparation training. And so they all have that on a Saturday in the Great Hall. And we have, you know, the ministry teacher coming to teach them. And they've lifted the restriction for apparition and disapparition just with inside the hall so the students can practice. And it's at this practice that Harry realizes that Crabbe, Goyle, and Malfoy are having an interesting conversation and makes his way over to them so that they can hear it. And what he's able to pick up on is that they have been guarding areas for Malfoy, and they aren't being told what Malfoy is doing, and they're upset about that. And so it's it gives us an opportunity for Harry to have a brilliant idea then of maybe how he can track Malfoy and see what he's up to.
Yeah, I find the section, so beyond that, I find the sections with the apparition lessons really boring.
Yeah, they were kind of boring.
I don't know why, but it just doesn't, I mean, there's a few things we learn. She's really using this to tell us things, but I'm not engaged in it in the same way I am with a lot of other plot elements. So we learn about something called splicing or splinching, where when you try to apparate, mm-hmm. but you aren't thinking hard enough, you like leave a part of your body behind. So the case was like Susan Bones left her leg on the first,
which
on like the
second
or third
attempt. Sounds awful, just
sounds
super
terrible,
awful.
Right? And so, you know, we find out you end up with these three things and you kind of learn about that. And there's a part of this that I don't want to spoil. I can't spoil the rest of the book. It would spoil the rest of the book. But Harry uses this as an opportunity to try to track Malfoy using the Marauder's map that he still has. Because mm-hmm. he knows he's sneaking around. He knows he'll be with Crabbe and Goyle. So he goes to kind of look for him on a pretty regular basis. And I'm so irritated, and I can't say why now, but it's so irritating to read this section because it's so obvious and it's so irritating. So I can't remember if I found it so irritating the first time around, but when it's revealed,
right,
it's like, oh, I should have seen that coming because it's mm-hmm. so obvious. So I'm not trying to ruin it. So I apologize if that alone ruined it for anybody. But this part, and it's that, it's again, Harry's a dog with a bone. He won't let it go. He won't let it go. And maybe it's going to be a great thing and maybe it's not going to be a great thing. But it's the same situation, right? He's still on it, but now he's not telling anyone really, right? I think he tells Ron. I don't even think he gets a chance or wants to tell Hermione at this point. Yeah, he basically just wants to track Malfoy using the map. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, he doesn't really tell Hermione that I remember in this chapter at all.
I don't think so.
You know, it's actually a good idea, you know, to track Malfoy this way. I love, you know, Harry talking about how he's not even really that worried about, you know, apparition at this point. You know, he likes flying better. You know, it's frustrating to Ron because, you know, as Harry's doing all this stuff, he's not really paying attention to his best friend anymore. They're not going to get to go to Hogsmeade because...
which was supposed to be on Ron's birthday.
Which he was super excited about. And part of that is obviously because of the danger and the fact that, you know, Katie Bell is not even back from the hospital, St. Mungo's, yet. And so it makes sense as to why they wouldn't be there, but also that there have been disappearances that have been reported in the Daily Prophet, including several relatives of people who are at Hogwarts. So, you know, this is not a place that they should be messing around with, and letting the students out to go to town just seems like a bad idea. So Ron's birthday is not great. He gets some good gifts, but he mistakenly eats the chocolates, the chocolate cauldrons that Romilda Vale had given to Harry, and finds himself 100% completely infatuated with her, to the point where only thing that Harry can think of to do was to get him to Slughorn to get the antidote. Funnily enough, as they're on their way, they run into none other than Lavender Brown, who Ron completely disregards and tells her to leave him alone because Harry's going to introduce him to Romilda Vale.
Vane, yes.
Romilda Vane, excuse me, yes.
Yeah. And she looks confused and devastated all at the same time. And I think that's also so true to teenage years, that this concept of love, that, you know, this infatuation that we mistakenly perceive as love, can change so quickly for no good reason. The fact that she seems to buy it right away is not surprising. But it's pretty rough. And he's pretty cruel about it. And in fairness, he's under an incredibly strong love potion, because we come to find out the longer the potion stews, the stronger it gets. And this has been sitting around since before they left for break. And I think we're into February at this point. So it's several months old at this point, which, I mean, I don't know if that's super old for a potion, but I'm going to go with it's relatively old for a love potion.
Well, and it's, I think you're right. I mean, it seems to be because of the just the amount of the infatuation here is super strong.
Right. It's a, I think it's a combination of how much he ingested and how old the potion was. And I think if we remember Hermione talking about it in the first place, it was supposed to be a relatively strong potion to begin with.
Right.
So I think it was just the trifecta of awful here of love potions. And so it was just really interesting that, and you know, it was actually good thinking on Harry's part that he needs to kind of immediately find someone who should be able to conjure the solution. And while one might argue that Snape would have been the better choice, he chose Slughorn just out of, I assume, trust.
Right.
So.
Well, and I mean, obviously Slughorn is a potions master, you know, so you would want to take him to somebody. And I kind of love the little conversation they have, is that the fact that he's like, oh, I would have thought you would have been able to do this. And, you know, Harry gives him the, oh, you know, I figured it was best to have, you know, the best person for the job do it, you know, and making buttering Slughorn up. And so they're able to make the potion. And
he also throws something in there about, like, I'm not good against love potions.
Yeah. And which, I mean, who is? You know, they're able to cure Ron, and Slughorn mentions that, you know, after something like this, it's best to have a little bit of a pick-me-up. So he's got some butter beer or wine, and then he pulls out this bottle of oak-matured mead, which he's like, oh, this will do the trick. And it's Weasley's birthday, so nothing like a fine spirit to chase away that, as he calls, the pangs of disappointed love. And so he hands the boys this drink, and they're about to drink up, and Ron has already finished his, and he is on the floor, like, foaming at the mouth. She says his eyes are bulging out of her sockets, and Slughorn just freezes.
Yeah, and it's a scary moment for everyone, but Harry kind of is Harry, right? And he jumps into action.
And saves the day with a Beezor. Luckily, you know, Ron is okay, but that's literally where we leave the chapter, is that Ron has stopped basically having a conniption fit, and that's it.
Yeah, and what's interesting, and I like here, because in the movie, you know, Harry raids Slughorn's whole kit, and this is kind of the first time we're introduced to a Beezor, and he finds it and uses it in the moment. And we miss the whole super adorable cheekiness from early on. And in this situation, it's the same Beezor he was cheeky with earlier, right? That was still in Slughorn's possession from class. So it's almost a moment of, like, sheer dumb luck that he even went that far to do that, and that was readily on hand. Because I think we'll learn more about the severity of the situation when we start the next chapter. Mm-hmm. It ends with this sort of, like, oh my God, what just happened moment.
Yeah. I mean, it's a crazy place to just end the chapter, you know? So, but luckily we do end with Ron being okay. And so it'll be very interesting to see how this then will play out with Slughorn, with Harry, and the mission that he has. And so, I'll be interested to get into that. But Drea, if anybody does want to catch up with you as we look towards our next chapter, chapter 19, Elf Tales, where can people find you?
Sure. If you want to come see the craziness that was this recording, or if you want to know what it's like to have a 2-year-old with the stomach flu, you can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And then I am on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero under the name MattRushing02. And then you can find me here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we just hit episode 200 for that show. So make sure you check that out. I forgot to mention, we're actually on episode 150, Drea, which means we literally only have 50 episodes left of this show. So that's crazy.
I'm both excited and sad.
Yeah. And you can find me over at the Trek FM Network doing two shows. One is The Orb with Chris Jones as we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. You can also find me doing the 602 Club, which is our general geek show, talking about all of those fandoms we love. And then I do another show. Last one is called Cinema Stories, doing that with my friend Courtney as we talk about films, but through the lens of faith. So thank you so much, though, for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.